Hello everybody, welcome to Ramble Reacts. Arsenal at top of the league for now at least, and Phil Foden is magnificent. I'm Marcus Speller.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
Welcome one and all to Ramble Reacts. Jim, it's lovely to see you. I know you've recently made the long walk back from the Arsenal Football Club Stadium, as it's not officially known, to your home, and you're dying to talk about your Arsenal boys, who of course now are top of the league. But you're going to have to wait, because we have to start with Manchester City 4, Aston Villa 1. I mean, it was the Phil Foden show, quite frankly. Although, I'm not gonna call it that, because that would suggest that his teammates were just all supporting actors in the film that was Phil Foden against Aston Villa, and that doesn't tell the true story of the game, because at Man City were pretty damn good. Let's be honest, to just brush aside a team who have done very, very well this season and who quite possibly will be playing Champions League football next season. Aston Villa were in the game for the majority of it, until Phil Foden decided to just go, nah, I'm not having this. We could do with a win. Let's get this done. Lovely old job. Pop bang, lovely. There's a hat trick. Shove it in your faces.
Yeah, and many similar phrases like that. I think there's a sense with City this season, hasn't there been, that they've been a little more kind of almost calm than we've seen them be in the past. Perhaps like they're pacing themselves, but this was a reminder that you can anger them.
Yes.
And if you anger them, they will just batter you.
Yeah.
And just completely leave you in their slipstream. And you know, they rotated a lot of players out as well. And you're right to talk about Foden, but it's games like this that really illustrate how important Rodri is, and how he is possibly the best midfielder in the world in that position, and he still seems to be evolving in that position as well. You know, obviously he scored again. That goal will be forgotten because of Phil Foden's hat trick, but he was instrumental in Foden's second goal as well. He is just, it wasn't a one man band, was it? If Foden was Morrissey, Rodri was very much Johnny Marr in that.
Like it. I would have used a different band as a comparison. I think you can all guess who. But it was just nice to hear from another indie, a great...
From down the road.
From down the road. Exactly. Keep it Manchester, as we're going to for a little bit, certainly. Yeah, I mean, Rodri's feat for that goal was absolutely glorious. But that was when Manchester City... They were 2-1 up, of course, at half-time. Foden's first goal was a little bit fortuitous, you could say, because the Aston Villa wall decided that it just thought, if we leave a gap, he won't exploit this. Although I'm not sure if it was Phil Foden exploiting it. That's probably a little bit fanciful. I think it probably would have just hit the wall.
It's like they'd put a serving hatch in, you know, like houses in the 80s used to have
like
just a hole in the wall,
like
pointlessly to pass food through, like my house had it. And like, obviously I did not grow up in a country manor, yet there was a serving hatch in there so we could all pretend that we did live in a country manor.
Did you make use of it?
No, it was just literally just a hole in the wall with doors on it. Just completely pointless.
It was. It is obvious. Not even like if you were outside playing and your dad said, Jim, there's a cheese sandwich.
Well, it didn't go outside. It went from the kitchen into the living room.
Oh, again, so cool. What am I thinking? Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
That's what Villa did with their wall, isn't it? For some reason.
It is, yeah. Was that a good impression of your dad, do you think?
It was fine. It'll do. It's not your Nick Hewer.
It's not as good as Nick
Hewer. You've not got as much data to go on, have you? So.
True. Well, I mean, I think Nick Hewer is slightly better known among the Ramble listeners than your father, so I'll stick with him rather than Mr. Campbell. But back to the game. As you said, Manchester City didn't have some of their big names playing due to injury and perhaps resting one or two through... little niggles here and there. I mean, Erling Haaland was on the bench for crying out loud. Obviously, Stones was, Kevin De Bruyne, Kyle Walker's out. And yet they still look very, very good. Aston Villa were without Ollie Watkins. And And it was interesting, when the game started, you could see Villa were obviously going to be on the back foot. And, I mean, a lot of the time they were defending with five right across the back. And perhaps maybe took a little bit of inspiration from Arsenal in their 0-0 draw against Manchester City. I mean, Arteta said, was it a day or two after the game, that he abandoned his ideologies for that game specifically to make sure that they didn't lose it. But for Villa, I felt that they were a little bit cautious. Maybe they were, you know, a bit aware without Watkins up front. But then they started to break. And of course, you've mentioned the Rodri goal, which was superbly taken. And not long after that, obviously, Duran, as I like to call him, scored the equaliser. And Villa were in the game. They were defending. They're fairly comfortable. Man City weren't creating too much, and Villa were still there, despite, you know, as I say, missing Ollie Watkins and also Emi Martinez as well. It wasn't until that second goal goes in from Foden from the free kick that the Villa heads sort of drop a little bit on half time. You know, you get it 1-1, it's far better. And don't get me wrong, City proved very much that they were good value for the win, but Villa did okay in that first half, I thought. But to go in at 2-1 when it was an avoidable goal to give away, that's always a bit of a punch to the gut as well.
I mean, especially against Man City. I mean, every time you concede a goal against them, it's like a mountain you have to climb. And obviously, you know, not every team feel like that when they score against you. So the second one is an absolute gut punch. And at that point, the tails are up. They're just pinging it around as they please. And there was a sense that they were maybe taking out a little bit of frustration. It's so, so rare, obviously, that they don't score at home. Mm. So I think Villa just were kind of unfortunate to be on the end of that.
Yeah. This is all Arsenal.
It's interesting, absolutely. But it's, it's the first side in the top five that they've actually beaten this season, which is so surprising. Yeah. But again, I think it might be the case that they are just timing the run as they do so that they peak at this point at the run-in, and just the plan is to just power through and win every game now, isn't it? Just crush everyone with their relentless winning.
Yeah, and you'd say they'd probably have to. But even if they did that, they'll still need, I mean, if they were to win every single other game, they would just need, what would it be, one result from either side to kind of go their way. So yes, I mean, I think if any of those teams, obviously if Liverpool win all their games and they're home and dry and they will win the league, that's all Manchester City and Arsenal can do. I would fancy, though, if Arsenal or Man City win every single game now until the rest of the season, I just wonder if maybe there's a little, as I've said to you, I've tried to reassure you as an Arsenal fan, both Liverpool and Manchester City will be coming to Craven Cottage. And we know how erratic Fulham are. We've spoken about this. We spoke about this on Wednesday's Ramble. Erratic does mean that it's not always bad. You know, there can be a spectacular performance in there.
And as you said as well, they've been pretty good against the bigger teams, the traditional bigger teams.
They have,
Like when you got beaten at Anfield. So...
But if Phil Foden does decide that he's going to turn a game and win it, then almost inevitably he will. And I find it interesting when you say that they were angry. For Foden's, if we can jump ahead to his third goal for a moment, obviously Manchester City's fourth, there was just an element of that feeling of Wayne Rooney's volley against Newcastle United, that crushing both, I think.
The one when he was arguing with the referee while the ball was in the air.
Yeah, as I say, it was just an element. Foden is a very, very, or certainly cuts a very different figure to Wayne Rooney, of course, on the football pitch. And we remember that goal. He's arguing the referee and he's really bending his ear. And then a moment or two later, the ball just drops to him and he pretends that the ball is the referee's head and he launches it into the roof of the top corner. Like an utterly outrageous goal. Well, Foden went down wanting a free kick. And it didn't happen, and he was having a bit of a moan. I just wonder if he smacked that ball like he did in a bit of... I don't know, I wonder if there was a bit of frustration there.
Yeah, the technique is just so ingrained, he can't help it. Maybe it was actually petulance. Actually, you know what? That should have been a yellow for kicking the ball away, as far as I'm concerned.
If it went over the bar, it was like, sorry, that's
no,
time
I think it should have been anyway, whether it's gone in or not. It's petulance, and we don't like to see it.
I feel that might have... got a response from Pep Guardiola in the post match.
But he also had a lot to do in the space he was in, because there were a couple of City players around him, and they all had to sort of give him that space. And again, just the kind of rhythm they're in, where it's like they can read each other's minds when they're in that sort of mood.
Yeah,
it really felt like a fifth goal might be coming, and like Villa are not a team that's very easy to do that against.
No, and I mean, yeah, it was a phenomenal goal. One could argue that his second goal, Manchester City's third, was the goal of the game. I mean, call me old-fashioned, but if you're going to smash one into the top corner from 20, 25 yards out, that will always charm me. But as you mentioned, Rodri, you know, his feat for Foden's second was just delightful. And it happens so quickly, the way that Rodri moves that ball. It's gorgeous. And then obviously Foden takes the shot early. Goalkeeper just stands and stares. I mean, the Villa players are just spectators when football happens to them like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's the power of Rodri, isn't it? He's just carried that ball so far, taken so many players out of the game with his sheer physicality as well. He's an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, it's interesting because we're honing in on Rodri and Foden for obvious reasons. Allow me, ladies and gentlemen, the Euros are coming up. You could make an argument for either player being a tip for player of the tournament. I mean, in terms of England, Jude Bellingham might have something to say about that. But, I mean, people aren't really talking about Spain that much. I mean, I understand we still kind of compare them to the great Spain sides of the late noughties and early teenies, or whatever we call that decade.
We just don't talk about it, do we?
We don't really. Not in certainly those kind of terms. But, I mean, Rodri, like, he could be, you know, a driving force to seeing Spain go all the way in the tournament. I think he's been underappreciated for a little while. I don't want to do the whole thing of, oh, he's underrated. I don't think he is underrated. I think everyone's well aware of how good he is. But really, we should have been talking about this guy as one of the best midfielders in the world for a few years now, rather than maybe just a year, if you see what I mean.
Sure, yeah. I think actually Spain will have a lot of hype around them, won't they? Largely because of Lamine Yamal, who will probably go to the tournament at 16 years old or 17. I don't know when his birthday is. But yeah, Rodri is going to be an absolutely massive part of that, of whatever platform that they build for him. And he is, you know, we've spoken about it, this record he has of not having lost the game in a calendar year or just over a calendar year, whatever it is. And that is... that is a sort of psychologically devastating thing for the teams that you're competing with.
It is. And and the guy who got the winning goal in the Champions League final, of course, you know, like it Absolutely. Shows you that, you know, his coolness and calmness and
always
composure.
Scores big goals.
Yeah, it was all, you know, in that moment there. So, I mean, Rodri, if we can look at the season more generally, perhaps, in terms of individual performances... I know that people have talked about Declan Rice could be in for a shout of player of the year maybe in or player of the season rather in the Premier League. Rodri is another one. Yeah. Phil Foden
too. Yeah.
In fact, a lot of people off tonight's performance, of course, absolutely purring about that, might have him down as the favourite. Would you have any opinion on that particularly, Jim?
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about this. I give absolutely no thought to it. Like, all of the players nominated are going to have a brilliant season. At the end of it, one of them will have a little statue. Regardless of who ends up with the individual awards, I mean, you know, it would be mad for Phil Foden to not be considered amongst those people.
What if there was a rogue one in there? Like, if I was to say to you, João Palhinha.
Paul Jewell's longest man.
Longest man.
Oh, I've got a lot of time for him, obviously. But I go, really? With his long-range passing? Yeah, and then I'd have a sandwich.
With that, another one. With that performance against Nottingham Forest? I don't think so. I want to mention Jack Grealish. He played. The response, certainly on X, which we still call Twitter and will do, to defy the Musketeer.
He's changed it again. It's called E-Lol.
People seem to be digging old Jack Grealish and his performance, which is lovely to see.
It's just nice to see him have a performance, isn't it? It's been a while since we've seen him sort of, you know, it's his first start in a long time, isn't it? I know he came on at the weekend.
Yeah,
but
good to see him get 90 minutes under his belt, or 99 minutes or whatever the average Premier League game is these days.
Yeah, I know he's very different from the player he was at Villa, where it felt like sometimes he was absolutely everywhere and was just given license to just go and make stuff happen. He seems to play in a much sort of narrower area of the pitch now, but he's still does have that glide. You feel like he's always the favourite in a one-on-one. And there is just something about him that is just really, really joyous to watch. And actually, you know, after a very, very long season where players have got a lot of football in their legs, coming off the back of two or three very long seasons in a row, maybe actually Jack Grealish coming into prominence now and getting this football in his legs, you know, competitive, high stakes football will be ideal and might be what kind of jettisons him into the England squad. Because I think his place is under threat at the moment. But based on what I saw of him tonight, I think he's looking like he's hungry and up for it again. Although maybe it's just because he's playing against his whole club. It happens so often, isn't it?
Well, he certainly wanted a goal. You could maybe tell that. And there probably was a goal in the game for him, but maybe Phil Foden took them all off him. I don't know. But yeah, it's his first start in 2024, you know, and we are in April. But we are in April. It's official. Believe me, everybody. So, yeah, I'm pleased for Grealish. And I think you're right. I think that him coming back now, I expect he'll probably play a reasonable amount for Manchester City. We know Pep loves a tinker. And, oh, my goodness, they've got strength and depth. Blimey, O'Reilly, do they just... So we're going to see him. I think he probably will go to the Euros, actually. I know that one or two of our...
I mean, he'll go to the Euros, Marcus. It's just whether he's in the squad or not.
Yeah, true enough. What, are the Euros being held in Marbella, Jim? I don't understand. but yeah, so I think can I suggest another player who I really enjoyed his performance tonight? Rico Lewis.
Oh, he's just... Is he English? Is he really English?
Yeah.
I mean, I know his granddad was in Oasis, so he's about as English as it's possible to be.
No, you're talking.
But it seems mad that an English player has popped out that technically gifted and that fully formed.
Well, you could say the same about brilliant. Phil Foden, couldn't you?
Absolutely, of course. But yeah. Well, I don't know actually about Foden because he's an attacking player, whereas Lewis, you know, is nominally a fullback who operates in midfield a lot. Just the very sort of modern qualities that he has seemingly naturally are really, really unusual and refreshing. And if he, you know, if he makes his way into the England squad, which I think is almost certainly inevitable as he gets older, it'd be interesting to see where he plays and how he plays.
Yeah, well, I did think to myself, I mean, it's too late in the day for this, and he didn't get the call up in the last window. But we're all kind of scratching our heads thinking, now, who will play in the midfield with Rice and Bellingham, really? A lot of people will say, should be Foden off back of tonight's performance. The people who think Foden should be playing in the middle for England will be shouting even louder, of course. And I get that, but I still would have Foden on the left wing for England. But, you know, Rico Lewis next to Declan Rice, I did think to myself, I know it's too late, but it's not going to happen, but I wouldn't be opposed to it, shall we say. I think he's a really handy player. And
Pep Guardiola has been in Manchester a long time. He's probably seen Kobbie Mainoo get into that last squad and think, I'm not fucking having this.
I can't.
Go and do what you want, Rico.
True enough. Steve Bruce was doing punditry on BBC Radio tonight, which is something that we all want to hear and see. He said Sir Alex Ferguson used to call this final part of the season in the title race tickly bum time.
Did he, Brucey?
He also got himself tied up in knots talking about his partnership with Gary Pallister.
We never got a rest. We played. He didn't think we deserved a rest, you know. So, but yeah, I think we missed about which helps enormously when you're trying to get a partnership when you play with each other. I don't mean literally. You play alongside each other, and that's the way it works.
Yeah, I don't.
There's a bit of fear in the voice there. Like maybe Alex Ferguson said that to them once to see how much his, you know, much influence he could exert on them.
Yeah,
I mean, Gary, toss off Brucey, do it. Promise you, you'll see why I want you to do this in about 3 weeks. It's 4D chess. Yeah. Go on.
And it's tickly bum time, everybody. Did he used to call them Dolly and Polly or Pally or something? He did have little pet nicknames for the both of them. An intriguing insight, really. And
well, I mean, like, let's be honest, he was in charge, wasn't he, Sir Alex Ferguson?
Very much.
He was in charge of the Premier League for a long time.
That's right. That's absolutely.
And
right.
Obviously, that was more so with actual Man United players. So
yeah.
I'm not surprised he gave them like quite emasculating little nicknames to remind them who was boss at all times.
It's funny because when obviously Brucey tried to clarify that, I thought to myself, this raises further questions. However, I don't think we want to know the answers.
softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Referees never complain about the referees and the action, but this action is really incredible. Incredible.
I think we should all move on very swiftly to Arsenal 2, Luton Town 0. And of course, Arsenal have gone top with that win after they pretty much strolled to a 2-0 win over Luton, Jim, with two first half goals.
Yeah, in a way that was like it felt like there was the muscle memory of it being nerve wracking, that sort of performance. But the bits that would normally make you nervous in a game like that, where, you know, they go 2-0 up and then sort of sit off, never really actually happened. Mm. I think it was, we've seen quite a few games like this in midweek, actually, after such a sort of pulsating weekend where the energy levels have been a bit lower and it's maybe been looked a bit leggy. And I think there was just very deliberate game management in the second half to just sort of contain Luton and not expend too much energy. A lot of changes as well. Zinchenko came back in. Thomas Partey, his first start in a long time.
Emile Smith Rowe
got a start as well, which was great to see. Reece Nelson, Smith Rowe had a really, really good game. So yeah, if this season was a compilation album, this game would be a little bit of filler, got to be honest. But it was still enjoyable to see Smith Rowe back in particular. He had a really good game. A lot of his defensive work was very sound as well. I know that's something that Arteta is keen on sort of instilling in him a bit more.
Yeah, I like Smith Rowe. I think he's a good player, and I think a lot of people think that as well. There's a touch of the Jack Grealishes about him, that sort of languid sort of style of play.
And the directness as well, the dribbling. Arsenal don't have a lot of players that do that in the same way that he does, certainly not in central areas. So I'm keen to see more of him.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's been a little bit injured here and there and so on. But I mean,
he had quite a serious operation on his groin, which has caused a lot of different setbacks. And it was quite a big one. He missed a lot of football. Arsenal have changed the way they play really a couple of times since he's been a regular first teamer. So I imagine it's been very, very difficult for him to sort of not just not just mentally to miss that much football, but to figure out where you fit in when things keep changing so much. But he did really well tonight.
Yeah, and with the amount of games Arsenal have, you know, Champions League coming up again, and obviously next season they will be in the Champions League next season. They want to be firing on all cylinders. You need the squad. And as we've seen with Man City, you know, strength and depth is key, of course, and all the other cliches. I also want to talk about Ben White and that little sort of Zidane turn he did in the middle of the
incredible
pitch. We talk about Rico Lewis going inside and being a sort of an orthodox central midfielder. Well, Ben White, he's teaching the world how to do it.
Yeah, Benny Bergkamp. He's got a lot in his locker, and we've still not reached the back of it yet. He keeps pulling out new things that you wouldn't expect him to be able to do. He's just such a sort of cool and collected kind of, I think, person, really.
Yeah.
And you see he's never really overawed in a game. Very, very rarely do you see him rattled. And, you know, it's probably just the quickest way from A to B.
Yeah.
He's there to do a job, isn't he?
Do you think...
The sooner he gets it down, the sooner he can go home.
Yeah, I'd like to see him take a penalty in a shooter. I don't think he was involved in the one against Sporting
last
season. But I just to kind of, you know, not even take a run-up and just slot it in the corner and the goalkeeper was waiting for the run-up and therefore doesn't move and he just shrugs and goes, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. He'd probably just kick it and turn around. He wouldn't even see if it went in. Wouldn't look. Yeah, I think, obviously, a few people were saying, or I saw, you know, on Arsenal Twitter, which obviously you have to take with a fair pinch of salt, a lot of people were sort of expecting a bigger scoreline tonight. And I wasn't surprised that didn't happen because, Luton haven't really been battered much this season, have they? And they've scored in every Premier League game since they were beaten 1-0 by Man United in, I think, November. So...
Nobody would have expected them to beat Arsenal, of course. But since beating Brighton 4-0 in that incredible win at home in January, they haven't won in 10 games. So we keep saying this about Luton. They've got that kind of plucky underdog thing going on. Sometimes they can be difficult to beat. You wouldn't say that necessarily about Burnley and Sheffield United against a lot of sides, of course. But they're still down there.
They're
not winning games. They're not even picking up that many draws as well. So one fears for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think, though, with Luton, more than any of the other teams down there, one win might instill the belief that kind of gives them the momentum to start, you know, picking up a few more points here and there. We see it so often. There's a team that kind of gets their act together just at the right time. There is no suggestion that's going to be Sheffield United or Burnley. Obviously, Forest and Everton have got such a unique situation with the points deductions this season that, you know, Luton have the opportunity to essentially shape their own destiny.
Yeah. No, fair enough. Right. Before we move on from this game, I just want to say to you that this time last year, Arsenal were 8 points clear of Manchester City. It's an extraordinary thought, that. Seems a long time ago, but it was true. Now they're 1 point ahead of Manchester City and Liverpool, and obviously Klopp's chaps have got a game in hand, which they're very much going to use up tomorrow evening, or perhaps this evening, by the time you listen to this pod, everybody. Do you think Arsenal are better equipped this time round in the title race?
The points total is lower this season than it was last season, of course, as you've just pointed out, and that's something that sort of gives me pause for thought. But I think the team feel better geared for a run-in now, because a big part of the collapse last season came when key personnel were injured, so that the quality of the team dipped heavily when you replace William Saliba with Rob Holding. With all respect to Rob Holding, that is just the case, isn't it? There isn't that sort of drop-off now. The team feels better equipped to replace key players if they're missing, because I think the squad's a lot better balanced. Hopefully those injuries won't happen at all and they'll have everybody fit until the end of the season. Apparently Jurrien Timber is currently the only player missing through injury, which is really, really encouraging. So I think they're better equipped to have a go at it at the final part of the season now. I also think the mental scars from last season, and to a degree the season before from missing out on the Champions League, will stand them in good stead, because it's just experience. It's emotional experience that those players have.
I would imagine that if Arsenal were 8 points clear, that is, in a weird way, more nerve-inducing, because there's more to lose. I think being in the pack... You're keeping up with them when they're around you. You kind of go, okay, let's stay with these guys. There's a focus there. Whereas if you're looking over your shoulder, it's quite terrifying in a weird sort of silly way. I don't know, people think, well, that's such loser talk. Why wouldn't you be? Of course you'd rather be 8 points clear, don't get me wrong. But it does provide, I think, a little bit of a different emotion.
Yeah, the key thing is, as well, is that I am enjoying it. Right, we have to remind ourselves that is the point.
That is,
and the higher the stakes are, the more tense it is, and at times the more stressful it can be. But you just feel more invested. You know, you feel.
Yeah.
Obviously, we make a living talking about football. We're about as invested as you could possibly get. But it really, the last two seasons have felt really, really different.
Yeah,
like really. There's an intensity to it that's not been there when you're thinking, oh, maybe we'll get fifth this season. And also, there's not a situation where, like, Skodran Mustafi is messing something up blaming everyone else for it. And I'm not sitting there thinking, I've paid him to be here. And he's ruined my day.
Yeah, fair enough.
So football goes in cycles. You've got to appreciate it while you can.
Do you think anybody at Brentford nil, Brighton nil enjoyed that game, Jim? Because that apparently happened as well. In among all the Phil Foden stuff that game did, that was played out.
You know what? I think there are fans of both of those clubs can reasonably look around at a drab 0-0 draw on a Wednesday night in the Premier League and think, it has been so much worse than this so often that actually, yes,
yeah,
I can enjoy it.
I mean,
it's exactly the principle we were just talking about, isn't it?
Of course, yeah. And for fans, you know, of Brentford and Brighton as well, a lot of them will remember very different times to being in the Premier League. So it's not too shabby. I mean, Brentford just keep picking up draws, don't they? Which just edges them away from the relegation zone.
Yeah.
Mind you, it could have been worse for Brentford as well, because everyone thought the referee was going to give a penalty, because he went over to the monitor at one point to double check his decision, and he went, no, I'm sticking with my on-field decision and I'm not letting VAR poison my mind.
You know what, that if anything is going to ruin the sort of wistful moments of appreciation, it is going to be that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going to be a really irritating VAR situation.
Jim, it's the last day of the Premier League season. Arsenal just need a victory to clinch it. They're drawing against whoever they're playing.
Everton.
Ah, yeah, this doesn't really work then, does it? Okay. Let me have another go at this.
Okay.
So, Arsenal are 3-0 up against Everton, okay? But they need a fourth to win the title on goal difference, right? Jordan Pickford is playing out of his skin despite having conceded 3 goals. They need that fourth goal. Is it a penalty? The referee seems to think not. He's called over to the monitor and the VAR says, could be a penalty. And then the referee goes, no, I'm not doing it, and runs back. You're thinking, oh, come on. How many times has that happened? Do you know what I mean? That's Brentford had a, you know, nothing like that. But
yeah, that's going to be infuriating.
Yeah, okay. Noticed I used Arsenal in the Premier League title race and not England at the Euros. I just couldn't do that to myself. Oh, dearie me. Let's leave on that note, everybody, for Arsenal and England fans' sake. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Do join us on Friday for the preview show, of course, where we'll also be reacting to all the Prem action on Thursday night, which is Liverpool versus Sheffield United and Chelsea versus Manchester. I can't wait for Chelsea versus Manchester United.
No, I can't either. It's going to be brilliant, isn't it? It feels like it's going to be a proper slugfest.
Yeah, because even if it's shite, the anger that we'll get from that will be an enjoyable anger. Do you know what I mean? Like it's going to be you won't be able to take your eyes off it. In the meantime though, do get yourselves over to X, because it's things are popping off on X. It's incredible. TikTok, Instagram and YouTube at Football Ramble, and follow us on Spotify. There we are. Thank you, Jim Campbell.
Thank you, Marcus Speller.
Thank you, Phil Foden. We will see you on Friday.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.